everyone, Investor Mama coming at you. I wanted to hop on the front end of this episode just to let you know that I'm going to be away. The family and I are spending some quality time together. So until March 8th, you'll be hearing some replay episodes. I went back to 2021 and I'm going to be releasing some of the top four episodes, the most listened to. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to these episodes before, now is your chance. We're going to just dive right in. Hope you have a great week and I'll see you back for a new episode on March 8th.
Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso, and on this week's episode, I interviewed Whitney Hansen. She is like the sweetest, nicest person I ever met, and she just shares so much from the heart today, and she opens up about a lot of personal stuff on today's episode, and I'm just so excited for you to hear it. But before we dive in, during this episode, we talk about having conversations with your spouse, partner, significant other, whomever. And so I created the 19 tips for navigating money in a relationship. It was inspired by Whitney and also Tiffany Grant from Money Talk with Tiff. I believe she was episode number 6 of the Investor Mama podcast. Definitely go check it out. She was awesome in it. But anyway, having money conversations with your partner is never easy, but it is super, super critical. And as you'll hear in today's episode with Whitney's background and her parents and stuff, why it's just so important, especially as women, that we have these conversations. And I know they're not always easy, but they are so important. And the more you have them, the easier we'll get, hopefully, with that caveat. I don't know about you. I am a money nerd. I love talking about this stuff, but my husband is not. And so if you'd like a free copy, just go to investormama.com. It's right on the homepage and you can download it. It's really awesome and has some great content in there. And I'd love to hear from you with anyone who has had the money conversation with their partner and how it went, what went well, what didn't went well, what you liked, what you didn't like. But you need to have them, even if it's like once a month or you can't do once a month, every 6 months, and just sit down, go through it with your partner. And if you're single, sit down with yourself and have these conversations. Because again, just you need to know where your money is going and what's coming in and what debt, all that baggage, the good, the bad, the ugly, you have to just lay it out. And also on today's episode, we talk about the emergency binder, which was created by Chelsea Brennan from Smart Money Mamas. She's on a future episode that we recorded, and she's also phenomenal as well. And I absolutely love this binder. I talk a lot about it in the episode, but I will put a link to it in the show notes in case you're interested in getting it. It was super helpful for my husband and I just to get on the same page around money and more about with the kids. And in case something happens to us, who is responsible and all of that details, which is always fun conversations. And so I hope you use these resources. They are here for you. So definitely go check all of that in the show notes. So anyway, let me dive into today's episode. Whitney is amazing. She has phenomenal content as well. I'll put a link to all of her stuff in the show notes, but she has her own blog, which is great. And she has her own podcast. The Money Nerds podcast is, I love it. So definitely go check it out. So without further ado, Whitney, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm so good, Jen. And I'm so stoked to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for coming on. I love your Instagram. It's fantastic. And thanks. I was really excited when you agreed to come on the show. So awesome.
Yeah, I'm stoked to be here. I think what you're up to is so important. And I know we kind of chatted about this a little bit pre-interview, but man, I love what you're doing. It is so needed. So congrats to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it. And I think the work you're doing also is fantastic. And I'm going to put links to your resources in the show notes as well. So awesome.
Thank you.
But why don't we get started? And why don't you tell me a little bit about your money story and your background?
Yeah, I love that you start with this question too, because I think it's so interesting to see where people come from. My money story really started when I grew up in a really small farming city of about 10,000 people. It was pretty tiny. We were not farmers, actually. We're not, but it was a really fun place to grow up. So one of the things about small cities, if anybody's grown up in one, they kind of get this, is when you are very young, you find your high school sweetheart and you tend to get married and start having kids. Like, it's a very normal thing for a lot of small cities. And so that's pretty much exactly what my parents did. My dad didn't graduate high school. He came from like a really pretty crappy home life. It wasn't great. And then my mom had just barely graduated, but she got married when she was 17 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Like crazy young. And so for people in like bigger cities or in today's world, they're like, what? But small city people, we get it. it's a different world. And so that's how they started their marriage. Now they had 6 kids together. I was the second oldest, and they did the best that they could, I think, with what means they had. They weren't highly educated, so they were very much like blue collar style working, and everything was great for them until my dad decided to launch a business. He was doing a pallet distributing business, which basically shipping, rebuilding pallets, all of that kind of stuff. And the business was 24/7. So one of the weird things that you and I both understand with businesses is you have to delegate. You have to let go of some control. But my dad had a really hard time with that. He just did not want to let go of control. And it led to very unhealthy coping habits. So he turned to drugs to help him stay awake and to stay focused and motivated. And I think it was probably some form of escapism for him. But that led to a lot of really bad fights between my parents and just not great. And so their marriage started to really go downhill pretty quickly. And so for a period of time, my mom was going back and forth. She'd move in, she'd move out. Money was always an issue. I remember she used to hide money. Like this was such a normal thing that I saw as a kid, was she would like legitimately like tape money to the back of pictures. It was so weird, but wow. She was basically creating her escape plan. And so I watched this go on for so many years until she finally got the courage to leave the marriage. And we were really, really broke. As you can imagine, she had barely had her high school diploma. She moved 2 hours away to where I live today and decided she was going to start over with the kids. So she was working at a hobby and craft store making $7.25 per hour. And it was terrible. Like I remember watching, she had to work 3 jobs at some points just to make ends meet. And it was so sad to see that, but it was so powerful for me because that's where I started to really learn that when you have money, you have power and you have options. And part of the conversation that her and I had later was she didn't leave the marriage earlier because she didn't feel like she had the money to leave. She didn't feel like she had that option. And so that was a really sad moment, but that's kind of where my money journey began, was from a place of scarcity and from a place of you need to have your own money, because if you let a man control you, you're going to be in the same situation. And so that's kind of where my whole financial mindset started.
And how old were you when your mom left your dad?
When she officially left, I was 16. She was back and forth for quite some time. But yeah, when she officially cut the cord and said, I'm out of here, 16 years old.
And she picked up with you and all your siblings.
So at first she moved up initially with just a couple of the siblings, the 2 youngest kids. And then slowly we all began trickling up here.
And were you working at the time too to help, you know, provide some financial support for her?
So kind of indirectly, you know, I didn't really notice that's what I was doing at the time, but she and I financed a car. So I was 16. So obviously I couldn't get a loan, but I was making the car payments because we didn't have a family car. Like part of the abuse when it comes to any type of really crappy relationship, some of the abuse is financial. They'll take away things. They'll not give you access to money. They'll like monitor every little bank account transaction. And for that, my dad would take away the car. And that was her thing. So I did work to pay for a car for the family, but at that time I didn't quite realize that it was abnormal.
And was your mom able to get anything out of the divorce financially, or was she really stuck and kind of started at zero, except for what she had personally saved?
So yeah, you know, it was so interesting. So because of their divorce situation, it kind of went back and forth in court for a little bit of time. They had quite a bit of assets. My dad was a car collector, so he used to just like pick up random cars all the time. But he actually ended up not even showing up to court, which was a bummer. That was kind of a sad situation. So thankfully, my mom got custody of all the kids and quite a bit of the assets from that as well. But on paper, there really wasn't much. It was a house and some beater cars that my dad would collect. So it wasn't a ton, but she ended up getting the house for sure.
So she really built your family from the ground up when you were 16.
She really did. I have so much admiration for, I mean, I can't imagine, I'm not a parent myself, but seeing her go through that and trying to see how would you even deal with, like, you're dealing with a divorce and dealing with the loss of your marriage. And now you have 6 kids just all staring at you like, hey, you have to make these decisions. Like, I don't know how single parents do it. I think it's so crazy.
Yeah. No, and I'm just curious, what was going through your head at the time like after the divorce and seeing all the like the fallout from a financial standpoint, what were some of the, I guess, key takeaways that you got out of it?
One of the biggest takeaways that I got was how critical it is for women, especially, to have some form of education. Doesn't have to be formal education, but some type of trade or certification or degree, some way that you can support yourself. So that was one of the things. And this is my own personal belief. I know there's plenty of people that will disagree, but from my background, I will always have a way to support myself and I will always have my own income. That was just something that I saw how terrible it can go when you don't have that. And so that was one of my biggest takeaways, was make sure you can take care of yourself.
So for someone who's listening out there, who's married and has kids, and maybe they're in a healthy relationship, maybe they're in an unhealthy relationship, What would you recommend that they do, though, just to kind of put themselves in a better position, especially from a female perspective? And this is very stereotype and very generalized, but oftentimes I see that, you know, the men control the money more or managing finances a little bit more than women. Again, not obviously across every relationship, but what piece of advice could you give someone, again, good or bad relationship, but just to kind of get that step ahead so that they can create that income on their own?
I think one of the biggest pieces is just general awareness. So I'm going to give you an example of a real life situation that one of my friends went through. She was married for, oh God, like 15, 16 years, long time, had three kids together, a pretty happy marriage. They were really in love. They had a good life, but he did most of the managing of the money. And she, you know, she kind of had it, she knew where their banks were, that kind of stuff. But he ended up going on a hunting trip and passed away unexpectedly, had a heart attack, and he died on the mountain. And one of the things that I saw, I was so grateful she did this. She was very sharing with her grief. She would go and do Instagram and Facebook lives and talk through it. And that was her way of coping. And one of the saddest things that I saw was she was trying to navigate. She lost her husband. Her kids lost their father. And now she's trying to figure out, how do I deal with the business finances? How do I deal with the money from a day-to-day perspective? Where is all the life insurance at? It was just all of these little things where I was like, man, if she had some awareness and if they had that conversation for each of the partners, really, if they knew where things were, they wouldn't have to deal with the financial crap that comes with it. Instead, they could just focus on grieving and being sad, and that's okay, but they had to worry about all of the financial crap that comes with it. And that really broke my heart. So I would say just get aware and have that conversation of, where is all of our assets? What do we have when it comes to debt? Just very, very much on the same page of where everything is located.
Yeah. And I know that there are fantastic resources out there to kind of help you get organized. Like I know Chelsea Brennan, she has a new podcast coming out, and she created the emergency binder, and my husband and I got it, and it's fantastic. And it's just a great place to put everything together and organize insurance, bank accounts, access to email accounts, phone and everything. And we found it very helpful just with our kids, like planning for our kids and everything like that. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. If you are interested in getting it, it was a great investment. And it was only like, I think like $40. It was super cheap for something that's over.
How long did that take you guys to go through together too?
So we are still going through it. I am very into the financial side of things. My husband is very slow to the table. So it's a process. I love him very dearly. But since I kind of manage a lot of it, I know where everything is. So I'm able to do a lot of it without him. But he really needs to know that if something happens to me, this is where everything is. where our, you know, wills, estate, like all that type of stuff. Even, I didn't know this, but if something happens to both parents, that you need to have whoever's going to take over for your kids, like not just a power of attorney or someone who's going to, I forgot, I'm blanking on the term right now, but someone who, you know, gets custody, they need to have some documentation that you allow them to visit doctors.
And that was something
I had no idea about. So the binder includes that form. It was fantastic. Like something, again, I just never even thought about. So that if something does happen to us, and you know, as great as it includes things about like the financial, where, you know, where all your accounts and everything's located, it also goes through the day to day. So if you do have kids, you know, what's their favorite food? What's their, you know, sleeping habits, their bedtime routines, just those little things, so that if someone were to have to get custody of your kids, it's all right there in one spot. So it's kind of a 360 of your life. Yeah, it's fantastic. So highly encourage people to talk to your spouse, talk to your whoever that you want to put in charge of your kids or your power of attorneys or your healthcare directives, all that stuff, just take care of it.
Yeah, it's so important. Yeah, that was when I saw her grieving too, that was one of the most heartbreaking things to see. And that's the last thing you want to worry about when something goes wrong is, do I have my bank accounts in order? Where's the emergency fund? Like, that's not what you need to be worried about.
Yeah, no, not at all. I 100% agree. And now I know you do a lot of coaching and work with a lot of clients who are also, you know, similar situations or, you know, also obviously mm-hmm. different situations. I'm curious what some of the things that you have seen also with other people who have gone through a loss or a divorce or kind of are now on their own and have to figure out what to do next.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's such a great question. It's one of those things where I see a lot of people all across the board where sometimes it's, I just got divorced. I'm a single mom. Now, how do I get control of my finances? Or sometimes it's, we're not divorced, but we're really on the verge of it. And a lot of it is because of financial disagreements. And so the common theme that I see with everybody when it comes to couples and money is they are just not having a conversation. It's like the communication breaks down. And that's where every single problem comes from, is not communicating. And so that's one of the things that I see as a common thread all across the board with couples, with individuals, with everybody. It's that lack of communication. It really is.
So what can couples do to actually start that conversation? Because even from my own personal experience, it's not always so easy if someone's really gung-ho and someone's like, I know it's important, but yeah, you deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, somebody's always more of the money nerd. I presume that's you, Jen, it sounds
yes.
like. For sure. Okay, I'm the same way. So we always have somebody, opposites attract in a lot of ways. It's funny. But you always have one of the parties involved tends to be very gung-ho. They might have like read a blog post or watched a movie and they're like, oh my God, this finance stuff matters. This is so cool. And the other person's not as sentimental about that. And so that's so normal. But I think one of the biggest misconceptions that I see is our expectations of how this conversation will go. We almost have this false expectation that it's going to go perfectly. Everything's just going to go smoothly. Everyone's going to get along. There's not going to be any tears or any, you know, harsh words. And it's just going to go smoothly. And that's so not true. It's a tough conversation. So I think giving yourself permission to understand that this is not necessarily going to be a pleasant conversation, at least at the beginning. That's where I like to tell people that this is going to suck. You're probably going to cry. You're not going to feel great. And you know what? You might even say, should I get divorced during these conversations? But at the end of the day, this is how you grow as a couple. And you, when you have two incomes, especially, man, you can make some killer progress. But it's that communication piece where you have to be on that same page. And so I think it's first is just be okay with it not being a phenomenal conversation first.
Do you, not maybe specific talking points, but all right, you know, you have to have this conversation. You're ready to go. Like, what do you say? Or how do you begin this?
Yeah, no, that's so good. One of the best things I can recommend is if you are afraid of the way the conversation might go, schedule this same conversation in a restaurant, because you're going to be on your best game when you guys are in public. So have the first conversation in a restaurant. I want you literally, yeah, no, seriously, it matters. And then seriously put it on your calendar. Each of you have it on your calendar. So you know, this is going to be a recurring thing, especially the first time. Now, I think the first conversation that you start to dive into the weeds with money, it's having a conversation about how much debt do we have? You'd be shocked on how many couples hide that stuff from each other. It breaks my heart, but there's so many people that are embarrassed and have so much shame over debt, and there shouldn't be, but I get where it comes from. So have that conversation of how much debt do you actually have? What does that look like? Do you have credit cards? Do you have a car loan? Do you have some secret personal loan that I don't know about? Do you owe your parents money? What is the financial situation when it comes to debt? So start there and then start to talk about how much income do each of you bring in? So if you have not combined finances and you've never done this before, that's going to be new information to you. But if you are a newlywed or you're considering getting married or you've already coupled or it's a second marriage, whatever your situation might be, you may not know how much your spouse makes. And it's really important to understand what's the income, what are the expenses, and how much debt do you have? So write it all on a piece of paper in the restaurant. You guys can look it up on your phones, have it listed out. And the thing about that is I try to tell people to separate your facts versus your thoughts on the debt and on your financial situation. It's just numbers. Your thoughts are what give it meaning. So if you think I'm a crappy person because I have all this student debt and my partner doesn't deserve this. That's your thought on it. It's not the facts. It's just what you're thinking that's giving it that type of meaning. So try to be very unemotional when you're writing down all of the numbers. But that's a really good place to start to just see where are you guys at.
So you recommend, you know, bring your phone with you. Say, all right, let's just, you know, kind of get a couple baseline numbers. There's no judgment, like creating a safe space of conversation and literally just going through and writing down income, expenses, and debts.
Yep. That's the best place to start for that first conversation. And then I think the second and follow-up conversations are going to be a little bit more intimate and probably don't have these ones at a restaurant. So sit down and put the kids away, like do what you can, take the dog outside, like do what you got to do so that you guys can have truly undivided attention. Hire a babysitter if you can. And like, just sit there and talk about how was money discussed when you were a kid? What did your financial money story look like? Because you better believe that affects every single person today, unless you've gone through a significant amount of therapy. It's going to affect you. And so it's important to understand where your partner's coming from. And it's not a competition. Sometimes I see a lot of people trying to like one up, like, oh no, wait, my childhood was worse. Like, it's not the time for this stuff. Just hear your partner, zip your mouth and listen to them and understand and empathize what they went through and how money was discussed. Who was the financial manager? Was it the mom, the dad, the other, like what's their situation? And then from there, you can start to understand why that stuff is so important to them, why they typically are modeling after their parents, but you have to understand where they come from.
So for someone who might be feel less empowered in the relationship to even approach wanting to start the conversation, any tips on how they can feel more empowered to even raise this, and to any tips so that they don't feel that they're being pushed down or that they feel confident enough to at least, even in the first conversation, let's say, for example, that they feel confident enough of saying what their expenses are, what their income is, and what their debts are.
A lot of times I notice people will start to feel like they can't have that conversation or they shouldn't, because for some reason society tells us talking about money is impolite. And I think you have to really nip that in the butt first and say that this is a normal part of life. And if I want us to win as a couple, I have to do this. So I think sometimes when we come from a place of like self-empowerment, it can feel awkward. But if you're coming at it from a place of, what can I do to help my marriage, to give my relationship the best chance possible, I think that takes that pressure off of you and becomes more about us. And so I think that's one of the things too. It's just a language thing. Just be careful of that. If you are finding that you're always saying it's me, 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 it comes from a place of like being like selfish and self-centered, and that doesn't feel good. So if you are that type of person, just say us. What can I do to better us and our family? And I think that will start to help you feel more empowered, because you probably care. Unfortunately, I see a lot of moms that care way more about their children than they do themselves. And so just do this for your kids. This is for your family. Make it a better conversation for them, if anything else.
So given your history and background, what would you say to someone who is trying to have these conversations with their spouse, but their spouse is really negative or really hiding things or really difficult to work with? Like, are there red flags, or at what point do you kind of encourage people to maybe think a little bit, not obviously to rush to divorce right away, but that there might be some serious issues in this relationship and mm-hmm. we need to figure this out, or, you know, I'm not in a good, healthy place.
Yeah. I think anytime you find secret bank accounts, or if you find your partner's very uncomfortable talking about how much debt they have, there's always some deeper meaning behind that. I actually have came across this with coaching clients, and it was so sad, but the partner had a secret credit card, and on that credit card was charges for their mistress on the side. And that eventually came out, but oh, like that's a crappy conversation to go through. So if you're getting a ton of hesitation, not saying that's the situation, but there could be something deeper there. And so I think just be prepared for when you start to dig into that. Sometimes you don't find things you like. Usually it's fine. Usually it's more stemmed from shame. But if they are really hesitant to share anything, sit down and say, okay, I'm sensing that there's some hesitation with you sharing these numbers. I understand it's embarrassing. I get it. Can we just talk about like, where is this coming from? And just let that conversation kind of flow and see where it leads.
I love that, because sometimes you just might need to make a decision that you may not really want to make, but this is a way to kind of uncover that.
Yeah. And I see, you probably see this too, Jen, but we come across people all the time that are truly unhappy in their relationships because of money. Oh, partially. I think there's always an underlying issue behind that too. But if you can't get on the same page with money, you have two options. You can get divorced, you can deal with it, or you can decide, you know what, we're just going to manage money separately. Like, those are your choices. And sometimes you do have to do the right thing for you, which is, in some cases, is leaving the relationship.
You know, thank you for saying that, because it's so obvious, but just hearing you clarify that and articulate it in that way, it just lays out what your plan, like, you may not like what you have to decide, but this is really what you have to decide. It's yeah. This path or this path, and that's it.
I know. And I always feel like such a jerk when I say that, but really, that's your options. I don't know. I see a lot of people really trying to force the financial thing. And at some point, it's like, if you really value the relationship and you're happy and you feel like you're committed from that perspective, it's a good fit for you, but the money stuff is not working, separate your accounts and continue on. Like, quit making this a bigger thing. Like, it's very okay. There's not one way to manage money.
And that's actually what Joe and I do. Like, we come together at the end of the month. We go through all of our stuff together, but we still have separate accounts. It was just, we like having our own money. We work, we know what we're doing. We're not hiding anything, but I think it's also, we're just lazy and don't want to get joint accounts, but it works for us. There's no hidden things. We've had many open conversations. He knows where all my money's going and coming in, unless we're trying to surprise each other. But I feel like there is this, I don't want to say stigma or thought, that once you get married, everything has to be together. Everything has to be, you know, on the up and up. Do you find that with your clients that it's one way or the other, or is it pretty diverse?
It's so based on their backgrounds, particularly with religious backgrounds is what I find. And so for a lot of millennials that I work with, a lot of them are very comfortable with keeping things separate. Like, they might have one joint checking account for some of their expenses, like their house payment, the groceries, if they do grocery shopping together. But other than that, they're very okay with having separate accounts. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. The only thing that I would suggest, so this is something that Tony, my fiance Tony and I, we've been together, oh God, almost 16 years, which is so nuts.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. One of the things that we are now doing as well is we have our finances separate, and I actually prefer it that way. I really do. But we are now doing a joint emergency fund because we live together. We share housing expenses. It just makes sense where, again, like, when I die or he dies, I want one of us to feel like we can still grieve and have enough money to cover the living expenses and not have to worry about that. So that's the only thing I would say for couples, maybe like consider a joint emergency fund. But if you choose to keep it separate, you do you.
Yeah, no, we do. I shouldn't say that. We do have some accounts that are like our emergency, all of our major savings are combined. Yeah. But we have separate checkings. It's just, there's no question. We both trust each other. So there's no like, what'd you spend this on? What did you spend that on?
Totally.
It's kind of like, as long as we have our savings rate locked in and we're saving, then it's like, I don't care what you spend your money on anything else kind of thing.
One of the things that I see so often that drives me so crazy is couples will try to micromanage each other. And the way they micromanage is, well, this is a value of mine, so therefore it should be a value of yours. So I'll put this into like a real example. One of the things that I noticed for Tony and I is we started to look into each other when we were starting to get like financial goals together. We would talk about each of our budgets and start to almost like nitpick. I would nitpick that he was eating out. I didn't see the value in that. I'm like, this is dumb. Like, why are you spending so much money on eating out? It doesn't matter. But at the same time, I was spending money on my hair appointments. I had a subscription to FabFitFun. Like, there were some things that he just could not understand. And I think that the lesson here is we all do this to each other to some extent, but we can't put our values and what's important to us onto our partners. And that's going to cause tension. When people don't behave the way we think they should behave, we get frustrated. When really, if your partner has their own money to spend however they choose, it doesn't matter. And you can spend your money however you choose. But it's, as long as I think it's an agreed upon amount, that's really all that matters. But man, I see a lot of people just trying to like micromanage based on their own personal values.
Yeah, no, that was something that I think is really important that Joe and I kind of talked about, because we, for the most part, are pretty aligned in what our values are. But sometimes there's things he buys that I'm kind of like, not my cup of tea, but you know what? That's his fun money. He wants to do it, go mm-hmm. for it. And I know he thinks the exact same thing about me, so I'm no angel either.
any means. None of us are.
So going back to the money conversation, step one is you meet at a restaurant, you go through your income, expenses, and your debts. Step two is you get into the more personal conversation. You set time on the calendar to meet just the two of you where you can really focus. And you talk about your own money stories, kind of your experiences. You go through all that. Is there a step three or what do you recommend next?
Yeah, the next piece would be to, once you have the conversations completed and you start to have some respect for where your partner comes from, you can put that into the financial plan. If you find your partner values financial security, then you can start to say, I understand why having a bigger emergency fund might be important to you. So you can start to put that into practice. But I think step three is where things get fun because you can dream together. And I think it's important for you to just sit down and say, where do we want our life to look like for the next 5 years? I wouldn't really go too much further than that. I think it's hard to wrap our minds around what do we want to be in 10 years? It's really hard. Like you might start a business and have not as much income as you do today. So I think looking at a five-year plan tends to be a little bit better for most people. And just sit down. Do you want to do real estate investing? Do you actually want to live in Italy every summer for, I don't know, like teach your kids Italian and have the best pasta of your life? Like, what does your dream life look like together? And then start to create a savings plan for how are you going to get to that point? So I think that's when you both agree on what your vision together looks like, it's easy to get behind the same mission if you both understand what you're working towards.
I want to just stop on this point right here because I've often found that couples have a hard time actually dreaming and they live within this mindset of what is and not what could be. And I'm curious with your clients of if you, how you encourage that conversation of don't focus on what is right now, but maybe like you really want to leave your job or you really want to start a business. How can we make this happen?
That is such a good point though, because you're spot on. People do tend to have a hard time dreaming bigger than what they have seen in their own lives. And so I think that's why as a couple, it's really important for you to, there's so many good podcasts that you can listen to together that will just start to inspire you for thinking a little bit bigger that has more of a relationship focus. So I'd say that's one of the things you can do is start to get, raise your vibe, basically start to get, you know, different energy, different levels and learn from different couples. I think that's a good place to begin because once you can start to raise your vibe, you start feeling happier, start to feel like, oh, this could be really cool. And then also, I think watching documentaries, I don't know, like I know you're a big time fan of documentaries too. So that's another thing that you can do that just starts to spark something in you where maybe you watched a documentary and it was all about lack of clean water in developing countries. Together, if that is a mission where you're like, oh, that really irks me, that really bothers me, that could be your why. So that could become your bigger dream too. So I think it's just more about finding some common ground there. And sometimes I find that podcasts and documentaries really do raise my vibe and it might help for you too.
Do you have any recommendations of podcasts or documentaries that you've seen that I could recommend?
So the documentary that I think you should definitely watch is Playing with Fire. That one.
Fantastic.
Right? I mean, it's, you know this. You totally know this.
Yes.
It's huge. And I think that one's really good for just understanding like what could happen in your life, like what could be. So that's the first one. And then the second documentary is Happier. Have you seen that one yet?
I have not.
Might just be Happy. Actually, it's just Happy. It's a picture. The cover has like a little smiley face with clouds. So that one I think is really good because it starts to teach you that you can be happy by having more intimate connection with your family and your community. And so that could be something too where I think reshifting your mind to, I don't have to spend money to have that connection. I can actually just connect with my family, play board games, just do dinner nights. Like there's different ways to feel connected and happier ultimately. So that one's a great one. And then for podcasts for couples, there's one called Impact Theory. And this is by, I forget the guy's name.
That's okay. Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. All good. And actually just to piggyback on Playing with Fire, we're actually going to have the lead Taylor Rickens on an upcoming podcast. So stay tuned because she's going to be awesome. Yeah.
That's big time. That's so cool. Fun. So yeah, that one, Impact Theory is great. And then Rise Together, this is Rachel Hollis's podcast. Her and her husband have a podcast together that I think is really, it's really fun to hear how they approach marriage and business and all of that stuff. And the whole point of this is not to teach you about business. It's just to learn about how do you raise your vibe so that you can start to dream bigger because you start believing in yourself a little bit more too.
Great. I'll definitely recommend these. And just out of curiosity, are these like religious based or are these more like kind of neutral? I know sometimes they could be religious.
Here's the funny thing. Rise Together tends to be a little bit more religious based. I think they like have a Christian background. Impact Theory, very much the opposite. So you're going to get very different opinions on how to do relationships. I think it's fun to hear both of their different perspectives.
Cool. Awesome. I'll definitely put both in the show notes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, cool. So after step three, sorry for that tangent. I just thought it was kind of important to kind of touch on, but is there another step after that?
The step after that would be the execution phase. That's where you guys are actually making it happen. And that's where you might decide we need to pick up a side hustle to help us pay off debt faster so we can free up our cash flow and then invest in real estate. Or it could be something where maybe you're just cooking at home together a little bit more so you can reduce your eating out expenses. But I think it's all about that execution phase. And that looks different for every single couple. So you have to find and test what works best for you guys. Is it going to be cooking at home? Is that sound terrible to you and you still want to eat out? Like, make this your own, but ultimately execute in any way that you can. It could be automating your savings accounts. It could be investing more money into your retirement accounts if you want to retire early, perhaps. But I think that's where you really got to put your personality into it.
That's awesome. And I'll just make a quick comment on the food thing, because I do not like cooking for all my friends and family who know me. My husband's actually pretty good at it, and we've been doing Blue Apron for many years now, but the cost is just absurd. So we're actually about to try Dinnerly. It's only about $250 a person.
Whoa.
I don't know if it's as healthy. Like, I'm still researching it, but I will put a link in the show notes and I will give an update. But that might be if you don't like to cook necessarily, or you don't like to go grocery shopping, but you still want to go live below your means, it might be a good resource. So stay tuned on an update on that. But yes.
That's a great tip. I love that.
So great. Anything else after execution?
No, that is it. And sometimes you're going to go back to step two. Sometimes you're going to move forward. Like, this is definitely a circle. But I think that's the best approach that I've seen for couples, is to go through those different steps and just take the time and just be respectful of each other. And if you can truly empathize and understand where each other's coming from, I think you can find your own version of success.
I love it. This has been awesome. Like, just so clean, clear cut, laid out for someone from the very bottom of steps to actually get on the same financial page. Do you have any other last minute tips before we enter our lightning round?
No, the only last tip is just be nice to each other. Seriously.
That's important.
It really is.
Awesome. Well, Whitney, at this point in the show, I'd like to transition into our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same four questions every week. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Let's do this.
All right. Awesome. Question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Ooh, I used to compete in bodybuilding competitions.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good. Okay.
Did you like win anything cool? Like, did you have fun with it?
I did. I did win a few times. Yeah, it was good. I don't do it anymore, though. I need to get back into my weightlifting routine. Life.
Oh, good luck.
Thank you.
Question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I go through seasons. So currently the person that is inspiring me most is James Clear with his book, Atomic Habits. I've been loving it. That is right up my alley right now. So definitely James Clear.
You've been like the third person who's mentioned that book on this podcast.
Have you read it yet?
I've read the free, the Amazon like intro. And I just got to like get it and just finish the book.
Oh, it is. If you read The Power of Habit first and then stack it with Atomic Habits, oh, game changer. It's so good.
Awesome. Yeah, I have heard that one's good too. I've not read that yet. That's on my list.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one.
Question number three is, what books are you reading now or have read that you've loved and would recommend?
So the book that I am currently reading is Company of One. It's by Paul Jarvis. And it's all about building a small but healthy, profitable business. It's really, really good for people that want to start a business, but don't necessarily want to have hundreds or thousands of employees, but you still want to make a great living. I think it's a really good book that teaches you a little bit more about that.
Oh, that's great. I'll have to add that to my list. Thank you. And question number four is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their financial independence journey?
Besides, subscribe to your podcast.
Thank you.
No, really, they should, though. They really should. I think one of the biggest tips that I can give people is to be surrounded by people that are similarly minded and on a very similar path to whatever the financial goal you're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to pay off your debt, follow people that are trying to also pay off debt so that you don't get overwhelmed and feel like you're so far behind. So I would say stay in your lane with whatever area you are focusing on in your financial life. And that's where you can start to find some saturation and start to change your mindset and just feel better about your financial journey without that comparison syndrome.
I love that tip. Thank you so much. That's really true and wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Winnie, it's been such a pleasure having you on today's episode. How can my listeners connect with you further?
The best place is to go hang out with me on the Money Nerds podcast. That's where I'm hanging out most days, and I do 3 episodes per week, so you can come listen in over there.
Yes, Winnie has an awesome podcast. Please, please check it out and subscribe. It's really great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yours is awesome, too, so I'm super stoked about everything you're doing.
Ah, thank you so much. And thank you for all these tips. I think you're going to help a lot of people out there, so good stuff.
I sure hope so. Thanks, Jen. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Whitney. All righty. That wraps up another amazing Investor Mama episode. Wasn't Whitney amazing? She's just so cool. And I highly encourage you to go check out her podcast, The Money Nerds. You can find it on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, all the places. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. And also, again, if you are interested in getting the 19 tips for navigating money in your relationship, just go to investormama.com. Scroll down just like one scroll. It's right there, right on the main homepage. You can access that. And also in the show notes, I put a link as well into the emergency binder, which Whitney and I talked a lot about. If you are new to the Investor Mama community, welcome. You can connect with me, find me on Instagram, Facebook. Just go to investormama.com/connect and you can see all the social media and everything there. If you did like today's episode and any of my other podcast episodes, please subscribe to the Investor Mama podcast. Also, it'd be really awesome if you could leave me a rating or written review. I'd really appreciate it. And also feel free to share or post on social media or share with anyone you think who would benefit. The more eyeballs we get on this podcast, the better. Any support is always, again, just really appreciated. And so thank you in advance. This is Investor Mama. I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.